Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Whale Nerds Podcast. This is episode 9, and I'm hanging out with Eric and Caitlin.
Hey, everyone.
Hi.
My name is Slater, and we're excited to be back for our 9th episode. I can't believe we're already this far.
Whoop, yeah. Whoop.
I think I say that every
episode. Yeah, I was going to say.
I know. It really does feel like we started like last night.
Nah, I don't know about last night.
Last week?
Two nights ago.
Last month.
A while ago.
What are we talking about today?
Did you want to answer any quick questions off the Instagram? We have a, just so you guys know, we have a running list of all the topics. So thanks for sending in those comments on the Instagram posts and on the story when we have the little polls up there. We are writing them all down. Did we have any ones that we could answer pretty quickly? Because we do have some.
Yes, I got one. This is one I want to get off my chest. this one's from Jordan. And he said, is it killer whale or orca or both?
Oh, ooh, here we go.
This one gets me going on my comments.
You want to go or you want me want us to speak our piece first?
It's all going to be the same answer. Once you do some research on it, the answer is always going to be the same. And it's all about the history of the animal's scientific name and the meaning, Orcinus orca.
Yes. Listen, I see them kill whales, so they're killer whales. The ones that I watch are killer whales.
Yeah, they are called killer whales because we've seen them kill whales.
And they kill sharks, and they kill fish,
yeah.
And they kill
yeah.
seals and sea lions.
They've been doing this forever, so that's how they earned their scientific name.
And they play with their food.
They do play with
they're
their
not,
food.
It's not like they're super nice to the other animals.
No, they're
yeah.
not.
All right, guys, tell them Orcinus orca.
Basically, well, like demon from below.
Yeah, or like death from below.
Death from the depths. Yeah.
Not a good time from below.
So, I mean, take your pick. Killer whale or demon from the depths. I mean, they're both pretty gnarly. Yeah. I go with killer whale.
People, the reason why people think you shouldn't say killer is because it's like the same reason, you know, we are the same feeling they get when you talk about sharks. They've portrayed them as these evil things when they're not.
Yeah.
So I think that's why people don't like the word killer. I get it, but it's yeah. also how all of us talk, like in the, you know, field. I guess. I mean, everywhere I've been that's seen orcas, you know, San Juan Islands here, SoCal. Everybody says killer whales.
Yeah.
Even the like top researchers.
Yeah.
There
but
say
then
killer
I also
whales.
I also think about translating it into other languages. Like if I'm speaking to someone in Spanish in the office, I definitely say orca because like, killer whale. Straight across translated doesn't really come through, but in English when I'm narrating on the boat as a naturalist, I say killer whale.
Yeah, I think it gets the point across.
Yeah, click and to the point.
Yeah.
You'll look at titles to a lot of scientific research papers and articles out there and it's straight out killer whales, guys. So even you know,
but
the
we'll take
people
all
we see as experts out there refer to them as killer whales. So I honestly don't get all bent out of shape when people call them one or the other. I get more bent out of shape when people argue about it because it's so easy to literally just, you know, do your research and find out the history of the word. And if you actually experience the animal, oh, man, I've seen them kill I've seen them kill whales. I've
birds.
Seen them kill sea lions. Me and Slayer seen them kill birds.
Yep.
And not nice
dolphins,
either.
No,
seals.
They just, like, punt
me
birds
and Eric
in the air.
Watch this pod attack one rhinoceros auklet for, like, 35 plus minutes easily.
Yeah.
And it was
target
just one
practice.
They would let it run, then they would like kind of whack
yep.
it, and
yep.
then they
Tim
oh,
was
man.
Calling it you know, mer hacky sack.
Yep.
I think it was yeah.
Target
yeah.
practice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Enough of that.
So that settles that.
We like it if you call them orcas, killer whales, or black and white dolphins, whatever. We understand it.
We get it.
Yeah.
Did
well, maybe not
other?
Black and white dolphins, because there's a lot of black and white.
Sometimes we
dolphins.
Say that as a code as the, amongst the crew, because we don't want to get people excited without actually finding them first. And like,
I like to be
and
cool
white.
And just call them K-dubs.
K-dubs.
All right, let's see. Let's go back to another question from the Instagram. What is currently being done to protect whales from ship strikes and entanglements?
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's... it's that's... Actually, both matters are very, very, very ongoing issues.
Mm-hmm.
I'll touch on ship strike really quick, and then maybe Caitlin can touch on the rest. But especially us who live in for all of us who live along the California area, ship strike is of great concern because we have some of the busiest ports in the world literally in our state. So, for example, Northern California, we got the San Francisco Bay. Down in Southern California, we obviously have the Port of Los Angeles and Long Beach combined. It's one of the busiest ports in the world. Mm-hmm. And container ships, that some of the biggest ones are about 1,000 feet long. And believe it or not, travel at a high rate of speed, travel up and down our coast. And the reason why we're here right now, because we're talking about a lot of the whales that are up and down our coast. So the lanes that the ships travel in, there's literally shipping lanes. That's what they're called. And the whales, unfortunately, frequent those shipping lanes. And there have been some adjustments out there, but nothing seems to be 100%. Obviously, the whales don't go, oh, that's a shipping lane, I better stay out of it. Mm-hmm. There has been talk to slow down the ships. Mm-hmm. That's probably our best bet. But some of these companies will not do it. Why? Because to them, time is money. There has even been an incentive for them. Certain organizations have offered them money. But it's like a couple $1,000s. And to a huge shipping company, that's literally, you know, a couple $1,000s is laughable. It's like, whatever, you know, it's pocket change to them. There's even been some more talk about maybe putting some type of device on the ships that will tell the whales to back off and stuff like that. But that doesn't, you know, seem to be working. There's even the, was it Whale Alert, the app system?
Yes.
Yeah, Whale Alert, kind of having people let, you know, these container ships know that there is a whale in the area, but, you know, a lot of them aren't going to go for it.
You because have to once also again, get everyone to use that app, which exactly. is really hard.
Yeah. So once again, time is money.
It's also kind of a snapshot so that NOAA and some conservation groups like Point Blue Conservation can look at, like, how often the overlap is of whales and shipping so that they can maybe influence regulations down the line. So they're trying to get, like, a historical record of how often what species are in the shipping lanes too. So even the instant factor is really helpful, but also like having that archive of data to show like, look, this is a very clear overlap for this species, and this is a maybe this is a better lane. A couple years ago, I listened to some really good talks at the Marine Mammal Conference in San Francisco. Did you go to that one?
No.
So there was two. One was the shipping lane report card system in the Atlantic Ocean approaching the eastern seaboard of the United States in the right whale conservation areas. And they, first of all, have a report card system, so everybody gets like this badge of honor that they can promote themselves with. They also get certificates on the ships because they use the AIS, so the global tracking system of the GPSs on the ships, to track their rate of speed as they approach going through the right whale designated areas. And so if they comply and their 10 knots are slower, then they get like a report card. And so the companies actually have started to take it on as a point of pride. They've like used this good version of peer pressure to get them all to comply. And if the ships are traveling less than 10 knots, they're actually way more likely to have a non-fatal collision with a whale. It doesn't matter what size of boat it is. If it's traveling less than 10 knots, any size whale, I think the rate of a fatal strike goes down more than 70%. It might even be 90%.
Yeah, I want to say that magic number was, 10 to 12 knots they want them to go?
Yeah, under 10 knots, most of the time, the collision will not be fatal. And so it was really interesting to hear that. And then that same conference, there was a couple tech companies there because some ships in New Zealand, where they have Brutus whales at one of the major ports, is using infrared to detect the blows at night. So when the ships are coming into the port, they can like use this infrared set of binoculars, basically, like kind of like big eyes on the boat, these high powered binoculars that are mounted on the bridge, and they can avoid the whales coming into the port. I thought that was pretty interesting.
Something that's pretty interesting to me is that like when it comes to the blue whales and the fin whales being so big, especially the blue whales, they're not really scared of boats. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think they're scared. They don't really have very many natural predators. I mean, orcas, right. But that's very rare for them to attack a blue whale. And so I don't think they're scared of very much. So for them to stop when a boat's coming up, I think they don't worry about it. Yeah. Like, I'm the biggest thing.
Yeah,
you know?
They're like, I'm the biggest thing on
Earth.
There's
been some cases where they actually have kind of went into the direction of the cargo ship. So
Sometimes they tried the pingers on the ships to try and emit just like this noise, and it made the whales either like turn and come towards the boat, or it made them surface. So then that's when they're even more susceptible to getting hit by the boat, is when they're at the surface. And so the acoustic deterrent was not going to work.
And after listening to John Calamakidi's talk on the blue whales, they were surfacing more at nighttime too, right? And that's when they were happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, they have put on those suction cup tags that stay on for maybe a day at the max. And the blue whales are not feeding as much at night, and they're spending a lot more time at the surface. And the ships come in day and night because they're just using, you know, electronics to navigate in the dark. And so they definitely can't see a whale when that's happening.
Yeah, it's amazing that we don't see or hear about more ship strikes.
Well, most of them go unreported because they're happening offshore. And a lot of these companies are not going to say something, you know, if it happens. And be honest with you, I think sometimes they really don't even know what happened, you know?
Yeah, sometimes they come all the way into the port, and then all of a sudden people are like, oh my God. And the shipping crew has no idea that there's a whale wrapped around the bow of the boat.
Which is crazy, because you've seen those images of like a fin whale on the front of the boat. Well, I haven't seen a newer image like that in a while.
Yeah, nothing very recent.
Maybe
I know
2 years ago was the most recent I've seen.
I know there was that fin whale that was taken into over next to the Cabrillo Aquarium. It was before I moved, so maybe about 3 years ago or so, or maybe more or less that was drug in. But I think that might have been a ship strike victim also. That blue whale that I went to go see in June.
Oh yeah,
that was also ship strike.
The
also,
one up below, or the
yeah,
one up
Point
or
Reyes.
Below, yeah, okay.
Yeah, Point Reyes. Yeah.
There was a humpback whale at Bean Hollow State Beach 2 years, 3 years, 3 years ago too, and that one was a ship strike. I haven't seen photos of one come in wrapped on the bow into the Port of San Francisco for a couple years. But to circle back to the entanglement part of the question, so that's a very hot topic in every state on the West Coast. So Oregon, Washington, and California are unified by this thing called the Pacific Fisheries Management Council. And then they have their own local, like state fish and wildlife regulatory agencies as well. And so each state's agency is taking on this problem kind of more relevant to their own state, but then also communicating. And I think they use the Management Council as part of that network. In California, there's what's called a Dungeness crab working group, because their gear has been identified as one of the most common offending types of gear for whale entanglements on the West Coast. There's kind of a caveat to that, because they mark their gear the best out of all the fisheries. That's why it's the most reported. But it is also more of a near shore fishery that's pretty prevalent up and down the West Coast. So it's just kind of like, odds are it's going to be Dungeness crab gear. And so there are some groups going right now to figure out if there's a better way to do that. There were some good prototypes at the Halifax Marine Mammal Conference 2 years ago, where they had ropeless gear. There was one that was like this lift bag that was like a CO2 canister, so it's like a garage door opener and RFID triggered switch, inflated the bag, and then the whole trap came up, and so everything sat on the bottom, and then there was no ropes in the water, which is the dangerous part. I know on the East Coast they're testing a couple different models with the blue crab and lobster fisheries, because those are severe entanglement risk factors for right whales, and they had a lot, and humpback whales, they had a lot of whale deaths last year, and it actually caused the blue crab season to close early. Maybe that was 2017. But there's definitely a lot of work going on, a lot of prototype testing, but part of me is also kind of like, it's been 400 years we've been using the same method. Can we build a better box already?
I remember a lot of the talk about it was about the ropeless gear and other types of technology to avoid ropes was the cost. But there is talk that some of the technology, like all technology out there, you know, is getting a little cheaper. Because I know there's actually some stuff out there even for I think they were pushing some stuff even for recreational guys that's ropeless. So maybe something nice and heavy duty and affordable for commercial guys is coming up soon.
Yeah, the crab raft technology actually was originally developed for recreational fishermen, and they're trying to figure out how to scale it up for commercial right now.
Hopefully we can figure out better ways to do this.
Yeah.
Yeah. You guys depressed now?
A little bit, but...
Should we move to happy stuff?
You know what? What I know is you can have almost all the world's answers in your pocket on a cell phone these days. I have faith that we're going to be able to figure out a safer way to deliver the world's goods and to feed people seafood in a way that's more sustainable.
Yeah. All right. So that was a great question. And yeah, I think those two issues are, yeah, the probably leading cause of large whale demise worldwide.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
As far as the numbers of animals affected. You guys want to touch on something a little bit more upbeat? We're going with questions from our listeners, right?
Yes. You got one?
Yeah. Actually, one of them that I actually got from one of our buddies, Hannah, back from Orange County, one of the naturalists over there. And I think, Slater, you've been asked this a lot.
What?
Obviously, you are known for your photography. So what's your, people just want to know basic tips, you know, out there, like, how do you get all these amazing shots?
Well, the first thing is YouTube tutorials on Photoshop. Now, honestly, I have a few tips. Going whale watching as much as you can is obviously going to put you in more opportunities to get shots that you're going to want. And high shutter speed. The boat's moving, there's probably wind, the whales are moving, so having that high shutter speed, I always recommend at least above 2,000 when photographing whales. And another thing is having a lens that has the distance to reach the animals. There is guidelines that were recommended to say 100 yards, which is 300 feet. And although they can turn and come towards you, a lot of the times the whales are kept at 300 or more feet. So having a lens that can reach that, I always recommend something at least 300 millimeters or above. I personally use a 100 to 400 millimeter Canon lens, and I've never felt that I've needed anything more than that. Also, when you're carrying a lens that does have more reach than a 400 millimeter lens, a lot of times they're heavy, so it makes it kind of hard to maneuver around the boat, especially you don't want to whack your neighbor when a whale does come close to the boat. So yeah, something versatile like a 100 to 400 or a 70 to 300 is a great lens for photographing whales and dolphins.
All right, sounds good. Now, you know, I know some of our folks here probably aren't as lucky as us and able to get on boats all the times. And you mentioned, you know, just being out there a lot, practicing. Have you shot anything else, like, you know, birds or any other animals or just landscape just for practice?
That's actually one of my tips. If you can't go whale watching, if you have like a, wetland,
yeah,
or a slough or something that has birds or some animals that come to it, that's one of the best places you can practice shooting something that's moving. That'll help you with, you know, photographing whales or dolphins.
Shoot your hummingbirds in your backyard. Yeah.
Do you have like a beautiful garden with some elegant hummingbirds? they're fun, but they can be hard too, even for, you know, professional photographers.
Yeah.
They're still pretty tricky, so.
Any major difference between like shooting, you know, like dolphins and whales? I know there is, but I just want people to know, like, what do you recommend to do?
Well, the thing is you could shoot a bird at a slower shutter speed because you want to stop the bird, the head of the bird and have that sharp, but some people like to have the wings in motion. So you can shoot a bird at like 1250 or 1600 and it'll stop the face, but the wings will still be in motion.
Mm.
So that's, you know, that's kind of unique to how you want to see your image. But when shooting whales or dolphins, you really have to have the high shutter speed. Otherwise, your dolphin's going to look blurry and it's just not going to look, you know, clear or sharp.
Cool.
Yeah.
Does that sound good?
Yes, it sounds good.
Are you ready to go photograph some whales?
Let's go.
Let's go photograph whales.
Let's go photograph whales in the dark.
Now, I know, obviously, whale photography, you just look online, Instagram and everything. It's a big thing. Some people make their livings off of it, right, Slater? But it's not just for like the likes and entertainment. And I'm glad a lot of photographers right now are putting it to good use. In fact, you know, I'm not big on photography, but you know, I'll pull out that camera when it's something amazing, or if I can, I'll use it for ID purposes, especially out here in the bay. You know, when we get our orca or our humpbacks out, it's good to know who they are. So I know a lot of our photos now are being used for identification, and one of the easiest ways to get your whale ID'd that I think a lot of our listeners are using is Happy Whale, especially for our humpback whales out there. With a simple photo of the animal's tail, aka flukes, the underside, you can pretty much put that online, and sometimes almost instantly, if you submit it to Happy Whale, you'll get an answer of who that whale is. And even sometimes a little bio on that animal. I know all three of us have submitted photos on there How many? You had a lot. You had so many you wanted to give them to me, right?
I have so many flukes that I have not turned in.
You know what I did when I first started doing it? Because I had so many photos, is I just gave Ted Cheeseman a hard drive and was like, here you go.
And I know who those ones too.
There's going to be so many in between too that it would just be obnoxious. I'd have to go through them.
And, yeah. And really, yeah, but that was it. When I was like sorting all the photos by species and flukes, and then it was just like, here, because I don't have the time to upload each individual one. But
that's one thing I'm bad at, is being organized with my flukes for Happy Whale. Uh-huh. But I will try to get better.
Yes. Like I told you, you can just give them to me. I'll do them for you. I have no life.
Wow. What an excellent offer.
I want to say something.
I've asked them that since I started working here.
Wait, will you do mine?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, I want to say something though. If you are trying to get into the whale watching field, whether it's a naturalist or just somewhere in this field, it is good to have a camera because you might be on the boat and see something that no one's seen. So
yeah,
it does kind of go hand in hand with like marine biology and just whale, all that stuff in general. So yeah, it's good to. Even if it's not the best camera in the world, it's still good to have one.
Yeah, I mean, I think Eric and I definitely would consider ourselves like amateur wildlife photographers too, because we both have cameras, and when something interesting is happening, it's good to document, like for the science part, and it's also fun. Like sometimes you get really nice shots, which is cool.
Yeah,
I know both of you guys have stuff that I don't have, and that's just because you're there on a day that I wasn't, or you were in Monterey before I was.
Yeah, taking photos is fun, everyone, and you'll be surprised. Sometimes the simplest thing will actually help out the scientific community. That's what makes Happy Whale so fun. I mean, it's for everyone. It's not just a bunch of marine biologists. Anyone from the general public can submit a photo, and a simple photo can figure out an animal's migration pattern just by simply you know, repetitive sightings, you know, in different locations. Sometimes it can even give you the sex of the animal. For example, you see a whale year after year after year, and all of a sudden has a calf next to it. You figured out, one, it's a female. Two, you might have even figured out its age. You know, for example, certain animals are sexually mature at a certain age. So just like that, you got a guesstimate of its age. So simple things like that are really helpful. And the cool thing about Happy Whale I like is that it's kind of like just like any social media. You can follow the whale, and you'll get a notification when the whale is respotted. So you kind of got a permanent souvenir there. And it's kind of cool to see a whale that you saw in Monterey pop up in, you know, in Cabo San Lucas somewhere, or even further.
Yeah,
we should do an ID trip only.
It'll be kind of fun.
You guys, if we do all-day trips, you know, we want to explore. So we should do like a not-so-all-day trip, but just like in front of Moss Landing trip where we just ID humpbacks all
day.
It's
like Pokemon. You got to catch them all.
Yeah,
got to
catch them all.
Get all the flukes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and different animals can be photo ID'd in different ways. Humpback whales, it's by the underside of their tail or their fluke. So when they go to dive and they're facing away from you, that's like the whale's fingerprint. And if you have a long lens, you can actually get a lot of fluke IDs from quite a distance. It's a really cool way, really hands-off way to be able to study whales without disturbing them. You just take advantage of a behavior they do all the time. But other species of whales, like fin whales, humpbacks, even gray whales, you can take a picture of the side of their body with their dorsal hump or their dorsal fin in view, and they have a unique modeling pattern down the side of their body, and then fin whales have unique markings. And size and shape of the fin can all be identifying marks. And gray whales, you can identify them by their fluke. Blue whales, you can do their fluke as well, but not all of them fluke, so it's not always the best tool to use. Most animals can be identified that way. Beaked whales, side of the body, Rizzo's dolphins. Killer whales, you want to get the eye patch, the dorsal fin, and the saddle patch if you can, which means you're getting like 6 photos per animal, which is pretty difficult, right and left side of all
three marks. ideally they always want left side, right side, but obviously on a whale watching boat, you know, 99% of the captains out there, if you tell them, can you get the other side, they're like, whatever, dude.
Trying to think, minke whale, any large whale with a falcate or a hooked dorsal fin, you can identify based on the side of the body photo. Sperm whales, they do the fluke. What else? That's most of them.
Well, with right whales, it's also the shape of the callosities,
yes.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one thing. But yeah, pretty much everything has a special technique. And some of you are probably wondering, like, if so many people participate, aren't they just going to get overrun with the same photos over and over and over again? No. That actually, it doesn't matter. They actually like that. Why? Because one, these animals are constantly aging and growing, so things, shapes of things are going to change, you know, size of things are going to change. Also,
mark evolution.
And also, some of those markings you see aren't natural pigment. Some of them are bite marks from maybe, you know, a sea lion or a seal, or from a podmate or another, you know, conspecific. So you just never know who or when something's going to happen to these animals that might change their appearance. So that's why they literally don't mind, you know, a shot of this animal maybe every day or so, or even from a different angle. In fact, I know a lot of these photo ID systems are now automated, using AI or algorithms, and they are almost, they self-learn, you know, they want, they kind of want bad pictures sometimes so they can kind of work on it and figure it, you know, and dial in their identification process.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. The more you submit, the better the program can get at finding out who that whale is.
Yep. You guys want to know a fun fact about an invertebrate I used photo ID for?
What?
You can identify sea stars by the, like, those calcium buildups they have on their, like, ochre sea stars.
Oh, that's the shape.
Yeah, I studied 30 sea stars for, like, 8 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And I photo ID'd them and documented them every week when I fed them.
Oh, so they were in a aquarium?
They were in saltwater tanks,
I thought they were in a tide pool or something like that. That's hard.
No, that would be way too hard. They move around too much.
Yeah, you don't know. You know, you'd be like, hey, will they still be there when I get there?
That's another thing. It's like photo IDing common dolphins or any of the dolphins that have pods of 100 up to 1,000.
Yeah.
Or thousands. So,
I mean, technically you could, but it's really hard.
Yeah. You technically could, and you probably will eventually run into them. I mean, for example, look at, like, our albino, you know, Rizzo, you know, our Casper buddy. We see him over and over again down in Southern California, patches, you know.
Yeah.
He's an offshore, and Travis, we see him over and over again.
Yeah.
That's those. Both of those are really cool animals. Not that, I mean, all of them are cool, but, like, patches, it's really cool that we can see that pod again.
Yeah.
That's what's awesome.
Yeah, they sometimes call those herd indicators. So when there's one really unique looking one, it always associates with some sort of similar social group. And so you know that group is coming through the area at a certain interval, and that can kind of help you figure out, like, where did these dolphins move around throughout the year.
Yeah.
Patches has been seen in Mexico. I don't know how far down.
It's been years. It's been pretty amazing.
It's been seen in San Francisco or up this way somewhere.
Really?
Really?
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Probably pretty far offshore.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
I could be wrong.
He's an offshore bottlenose?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an offshore. Cool. So you'll be surprised what animals can be ID'd out there. Yeah, Caitlin's just talking about the ochre stars. Even our pinnipeds. I know there's a lot of our pinniped researchers are actually taking pictures of the animal's, you know, face and trying to get a photo of their vibrissae. That's a big word for whiskers. And they're actually set on their muzzle area in different, you know, in patterns. So you can actually get a photo of that and figure out where the whiskers are situated, and then, you know, take a picture of another animal and just kind of catalog them. So we've learned that a few years ago, we kind of tried this technique, me and Kate. There was a stellar sea lion that kept on showing up in the front of Moss Landing, and we're wondering if it was the one from last year. And I told her about that technique, and she looked at her old photos and was like, you know what, it is the same one.
Oh,
so
that's cool.
Yeah, so just looking at the pattern of the vibrissae on their muzzle area will kind of tell you who they are.
Do you know what is another tip for photographing whales and dolphins?
What?
Picking the right day to go on the boat.
Yes.
And you can by calling down and checking with the office, but you can also do this by checking the weather on NOAA, or I don't know any ones out of the country.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's websites called, there's one like Windy Tide, that one's all over the world.
Or apps.
Sail Flow.
Yeah.
But basically, you want to look at the wind and the swell. So if it looks like it's going to be, the swell is close to the same wave height as the interval it is, it's going to be choppy. At least when it's in feet. When it's in meters, it's a little different. And then if it's going to be like 15 plus knots, then it's going to be pretty breezy out there.
Well, usually if it's that bad, the whale watch company will usually cancel the trip.
Yeah, it really just depends on where you're going whale watching at, too. You should always check if you've never been to that area, because it could be different from area to area. Like, we always like to say in the summertime, you know, come on the morning trip because the wind usually picks up in the afternoon. But on the East Coast, it could be the opposite. So, yeah, just make sure you check with the whale watch company at least a couple. And they know at least 2 days in advance the weather. They should be getting some sort of report.
Yeah.
It could change. It could keep getting pushed forward. But definitely check in with the weather.
And then also, it's kind of hard to take photos if you are feeling seasick, so definitely be prepared in advance. If you're worried about motion sickness at all, it's kind of hard to focus through the lens because you lose sight of the horizon when you're shooting and looking through the viewfinder, and so it can kind of sneak up on you if you're looking through binoculars or you're using your camera a lot.
Or your phone.
Or even, like, using your phone. It can really get you kind of disoriented if you don't take a break and, you know, get reoriented to where you're going.
Can I recommend medication?
Are you a pharmacist, sir?
I mean, I might be. No, but definitely try to take something that's non-drowsy.
Yeah. Yeah, and everybody's a little different. The pharmacy does have more options than what usually a whale watch office would carry, but most offices have something. But yeah, if you're going to take the medicine, you have to take it in advance. There's no, like, instant acting medicine. Some people use like ginger, or they use those acupressure bands. I've seen people with those
patches, but not the bottlenose, the ones that go behind your ears. I just confused everyone.
it's kind of whatever works best for you. Eric's laughing. It's like, you know, I get that question all the time. It's like, oh, well, what should I do? And it's like, well, it depends on you. Like, are you taking other medications?
I'm quitting whale watching. I'm creating a seasick patch. Patches, and
they
have patches on.
Hey, dude, you just threw our idea up on the podcast.
Really gonna
delete.
That was gonna be my way of making a living while watching whales.
And then also making sure you're prepared for your trip, so you're you know, warm, hydrated, you've got snacks, because it's gonna be more fun for you to be out on deck and get the photos and videos you want if you're feeling good on the boat. So
it also, yeah, depends on where you're at too. Like, I think guys like me and Slater grew up down south. We literally 24/7, 365 days a year on our whale watching boats could wear sandals and a t-shirt. Whereas here,
you're so spoiled.
Central California,
that was a life.
You read some of the frequently asked questions on whale watching company sites out here, and they'll tell people dress like it's snowing, and then people will go, "You're crazy." You know, we're just going out in Central California going whale watching, and then they come here one morning, get out of the boat, stand up at their bow, going, "Oh, okay, you're right."
Yeah, can we fix that? Air conditioner?
No.
Monterey is always like
the cold
it's.
Water
I swear it's
makes
it's
the whales come.
Cold in the winter, and then it's cold in the summer, and then guess what? It's cold in the winter again, and fall and spring.
Just to let you guys know how cold it's been. I don't think it's hit the 60s in days here, right? Yeah.
But okay, but now people in like Iowa are making fun of us. They're like, dude, it's been negative like a month.
Yeah. But this is
I can't feel my body parts. Shut up.
Yeah.
Oh my! Only thing that's working is my ears.
Like,
I can only hear your podcast. Nothing else works.
But yeah, I mean, mostly what we're trying to get at is just make sure you're adequately prepared. Wow.
Wear layers.
Prepared.
And check in with the whale watch company you're going to go with. They're the experts for that area. They're going to be able to tell you about the weather, what to bring, what to wear, what you can and cannot bring on the boat, things like that.
And I think I brought this up in one of our previous podcasts about, like, you know, traveling and stuff like that. If you are going to travel a great distance, you know, to Monterey to come whale watching, try your hardest. And if you can afford it, don't do just one trip.
Yes.
You know, maybe do. We had one buddy who came, you know, who did like a trip with, you know, every company out here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, spread it out,
yeah,
different days, different times. You just, because as Slater said earlier, just get out on the water. You never know what's going to happen or what you're going
to
see.
Yeah, it really is hard for me to break news to people about not going because of weather, and then they're like, we're only here for today and we came only for this. And
we hear that a lot in the office.
I wish you would have planned 3 days in a row, because what if 2 days you're blown off the water? You know, that's when I plan a trip, I always try and go. All
right, stop talking about the weather. You guys are gonna jinx my trips.
I'm so cold right now, Slater.
No, we're gonna
so
have
cold.
But yeah, if you can do it, definitely plan multiple days in a row just in case. And sometimes the trip's always different, so maybe you see something one day that you didn't see the next day. And so it's always good to have.
I mean, how many trips have you guys been on where you go out and you see humpbacks and dolphins, and then the next trip it's like you see humpbacks, but you see blue whales and, you know, something else, fin whales or something. Yep. So
It's so funny. Someone's like, I really want to see this on the morning trip, and we don't see it, and then we see it in the afternoon.
Oh, yeah. I've invited so many people out, and they're like, they want to see killer whales, of course. And then they go on the morning one, and I tell them to go on the morning one because the weather's going to be better. Yeah. And they leave, and then I stay, and then we see killer whales. Yeah. So it's like,
wow. So it was like this last summer when I took my parents, all they wanted to see was lunch feeding humpbacks. And in the morning, we kind of saw it.
Yeah, I remember that trip.
And then in the afternoon, it was really good, and they didn't go.
You'll have passengers ask you, too. It's like, what's your best trip ever? And I straight up tell them, like, you know what? I say that I had the best trip ever once a month, because there's always some trip something amazing happens. You know, I don't want to say they get better and better, but there's always something good that's going to happen to you if you guys go out, you know, as much as you can.
Yeah, for sure. Earlier, you guys were kind of talking about the distance guidelines, so being prepared with your camera lens length. So whale watch boats in most places around the world do have some sort of regulation or guideline for distance and what you can and cannot do. So in the U.S., it's a guideline of 100 yards. That's not a hard and fast rule. That's a distance you're supposed to attempt to maintain. But the hard and fast rule is you can't alter the whale's behavior. So if you're 200 yards away and then the whale all of a sudden changes its behavior, then that's too close. But if you're 50 yards away and the whale is still taking a nap next to you, technically you're not breaking the rule. So it's kind of tricky up for interpretation. Different countries have different things, and certain species have extra regulations.
That's a touchy subject nowadays.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, but that's not – the southern resident killer whales is one of the species that has a different regulation.
North Atlantic right whales.
And it's in different – and up in the San Juans, I mean, there's different regulations just in one area by the lighthouse, you know, at the front of San Juan Islands, the Lime Kiln State Park, and then around the corner, it's completely different than that regulation. So, there's depending on the species, there's a lot of different regulations.
And it's something to kind of just be aware of to help manage your own expectations when you're planning a trip. You know, not every trip they're going to be breaching like the Pacific Life commercial, or they're going to be looking at you eye to eye in the boat. You know, just they're wild animals, and we're trying to, you know, have them do their normal behaviors. And if that means taking a nap for an hour and it's not that exciting to you, well, if a whale's comfortable enough to take a nap next to you for an hour, I think you're doing whale watching right.
Yeah, exactly. Every now and then I do get, like, the semi-irritated passenger and go, you know, can we get closer? But it's like, we can't. If you do, you're going to freak out the whale. It's going to show off how long it can dive for you, or it's going to take off, you know? So staying back, watching the animal behave normally is a good thing. You know, you freak it out. It's not exactly a good thing. You know, there's some captains out there who are, especially, you know, back when I was down south, who really, really knew the animals well. I think one of my pet peeves is, especially with gray whales. You know, gray whales like to go to the shallow for safety sometimes. There's some people who will get in between the whale and the shoreline, and that's not good. That will sometimes wig them out a little. So a lot of the more experienced guys will actually stay outside the whale, so it knows it has that little shallow area that it'll probably feel a little bit more comfortable to run to if it needed to. So a lot of your better captains are going to make the experience for you, you know, make the experience as good as possible for you by, you know, respecting the animals.
The better you behave around the whales, the better encounter you have.
Exactly.
There's been so many times where we're just like chilling, you know, back a ways, and then it turns, comes right to the boat, rubs on the boat for like an hour, and then you start, and then it leaves for a second, you start to drive away, and then you see it turn right back towards you, so you shut down again, and then it rubs, you know, so.
Yeah, exactly.
The better you behave around the animals, the better they behave.
Especially, I mean, guys, we're sitting here talking about literally the biggest creatures on the planet. Mm-hmm. You do not need to be 3 feet away from a 50-foot animal, you know? So, if you want to get a good photo of it. So, if it's going to come that close to you, good for you. But, you know, there's no reason to get any closer because, yeah, you are going to probably, most likely,
switch your lens.
Depending on the animal's personality. Depending on the animal's personality, you know, yeah, if you get closer, yeah, it might either show off that dive time or take off from you. But, yeah, like these guys said, and I've personally seen it, you know, there are whales that are literally going to use the boat as a scratching post.
Patience is key.
Yeah.
Every encounter, you know, you just got to be grateful for it. It's a gift. Sometimes
they're not that exciting to you, but, you know, the fact that we even get to watch them is awesome.
I feel like photographing whales and just watching whales, they're very similar in the fact that you just have to be patient,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and, you know, spend lots of time doing it and treat the animals with good behavior, and then yeah. hopefully they'll reciprocate that.
And life in the ocean yeah. happens at a completely different pace than life on land. Like, even watching a competitive group or a hunt, it's like everything seems like it's in slow motion, but it's like just
yeah.
the whole concept of how the ocean works, it's just a different speed than what we're used to.
Mm-hmm.
All right, guys, so we get this question a lot too. It's kind of a funny question too. Are we at where the whales are yet?
Yes.
Or yeah. What's the famous one recently? What time are the whales?
When you to give some backstory to that, a lot of boats use what's called the clock system to spot whales. So the front of the boat's 12 o'clock, the back is 6 o'clock. You think like the middle of the boat's the middle of the clock, like an old school watch for those of you that used to wear those, still do maybe.
Thanks for making a bunch of people feel old, Caitlin.
I'm just saying.
Your watch has hands?
Ask a sixth grader.
I don't think it really has to do with the face of the clock. I think these people think that it's literally on.
Literally whale time.
No, it's like a dolphin show.
Yeah,
like it's going to be
exactly.
at 12:30.
Yeah.
And
there's people who think that.
Yeah,
these animals are wild and free.
Yeah, people ask me, what time do they breach at? I'm like, what do you mean?
Or,
well, actually.
What do you feed them? I've been asked that too.
Yeah.
I asked Caitlin on our, I don't know, one of our first all day trips, like last April. No, 2 Aprils ago. And I said, do the whales breach at night? Because it was still dark when we were leaving, and it was like just getting to gray light, and this humpback breached like 10 times in a row, and it was like you could barely see him, like, or at least we could see him perfect, but you know the camera could not see him yet.
Slater could hardly get
yeah.
a photo because the autofocus
wouldn't
work.
But the answer to what time are the whales and are we at where the whales are yet are always. We don't know. As I always say during our safety and orientation talks in the morning, it's every passenger on the boat who steps on the boat is about to become an explorer. You're looking for wild animals. No clue where they are. No clue what time they're going to show up. You know, even though they were there 10 minutes ago, doesn't mean they're still going to be there. Just because they were there yesterday doesn't mean they're going to still be there. So, yeah, think of it that way, guys. Every time you step on board that boat, you're an explorer, and you're going to be exploring with us. So. We are going to be looking for these animals for you.
Yeah, it's cool. There's not like a whole bunch of technology that goes into finding the whales every day. I mean, we use charts and, you know, flag locations where we've seen whales before. We have some areas that we know where the food's probably going to be, depending on the time of year, the migration. But, like, there's no – it's still very old school. Like, it's just get out there – pick a course that you think is going to work out and just look. People ask me, oh, do you have radar or sonar for the finding the whales? I'm like, no, we just have really good eyesight.
Yeah, radar, to put it in plain and simple, radar will find things that stay on the surface for you know, a length of time. So, for example, a boat or a structure like a breakwater or a pier. Sonar, most of our boats have sonar, and it's usually just like a recreational great stuff that is basically a fish finder that looks below us. Yeah, we can probably see a whale below us, but if it's right below you, you should have saw it a long time ago. But we do see with that sonar, it's depth, contour of the seafloor, which sometimes does help us know where food aggregates for these animals, and the animal's food such as krill, squid, and bait fish is found with that sonar too. And a lot of our more, you know, wildlife savvy friends do know that stronger sonar does actually kind of, you know, probably freak out some of our animals below us.
Some people ask me sometimes if you use the drone to find the whales, like if you fly ahead.
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. I should answer that. A lot of people always ask me, do you put the drone up to look for the whales? Actually, I don't put the drone up to look for the whales. I only put the drone up, one, when the conditions allow it or in the right areas, and also once we've already found the animals. And because if I were to put it up and look for it, I would really just be flying around looking at water. So it's easier, but once we found the whale, it's easier to keep track of the whale while they're on a breathing cycle.
Mm-hmm.
So when they're up, you know, near the surface. And then once they dive down past like 50 feet, I lose them. So
mm-hmm.
yeah, it's really just, it's easy to keep track of them once we have them, but we can't use that tool to find them. It would be nice though.
How long of flight time do you get on each battery too? I mean, it's kind of like
it really depends on like the wind and how much you're flying around. You can get anywhere from 15 up to like 25 minutes. So
that's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, even some of the drones are even longer, honestly, and it could go even faster. I mean, if you have it in like sport mode and you're going 40 miles an hour.
Just like 5 years ago, the batteries are only lasting like 10 minutes, weren't they?
Yeah, it felt like it.
But even then, like thinking about how long
I used to get so stressed out. Oh my gosh. We like, because, you know, a fin whale is like 10 minutes it's down for easily.
Yeah,
right. Or a blue whale, they go, if they're not being, you know, if they're not coming to the surface very often, you could put one battery up, get two breaths with it, and then waste a whole battery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's another reason why I try to put it up usually right on the first breath that we see it, and then I'll leave it up for as many sequences as I can get out of the whale.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's – maybe we can save some of the rest of the questions for our next episode.
Yeah.
What do you think, Eric? You got any more questions you want to answer?
No, I'm good for now.
All right. Well, you know what, you guys? Thank you so much for listening. If you made it this far, appreciate all the comments and feedback. And we'll try to answer more of these questions in the next episode. Hope you guys enjoyed this podcast. Make sure to follow us on the Instagram. It's Whale Nerds. And, yeah, have a great day.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for listening, guys.